Good morning, I'm David Green. It is Twitter's 8th birthday. To celebrate, the site has put out a tool that lets you see any user's very first tweet. Some were naturals. Warren Buffett's first tweet, "Warren is in the house," has been retweeted more than 40,000 times. Others might cringe at their first contribution. Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, tweeted about his dance lessons. "No pain, no gain. Awkward but fun, this dancing. I still can't do Macarena." That's what he wrote. You're listening to Morning Edition.
An update now on Asian carp. The invasive fish is found in 12 states and in the Great Lakes. Researchers have tried various ways to slow the fish as it invades other waterways. Now, a processing plant in Kentucky is taking a new approach, catching the Asian carp and sending it to China. Whitney Jones of member station WKMS reports.
At Two Rivers Fisheries in far western Kentucky, manager Jeff Smith heaves open the large door of the plant's freezer. Inside, there are hundreds of rock-hard Asian carp. They're several feet long and hang in tight rows. Before they get here, several employees gut the fish and hang them in the plant's closed-in processing area. They won't stay in this facility long. Plant owner Angie Wu ships them to her native country, China, where she says most people prefer fresh fish. But Kentucky's carp have one advantage.
There are a lot in China, but most of them are farmed. Not very clean as here, kind of polluted. So our wild fish, compared with the farm ones, are better taste and more healthy.
Wu has shipped more than 500,000 pounds of processed carp to China. Other plants have found markets for Asian carp, too. In Mississippi, one company uses the fish for pet food and fertilizer. In Illinois, Mike Schaefer at Schaefer Fisheries distributes it to ethnic communities in the U.S. and also exports the fish to third world countries.
Especially the silver carp is used worldwide as food source to feed mass people, you know, with a cheap protein source. Even Cuba raises silver carp to feed their people.
Asian carp hasn't caught on in U.S. restaurants. The fish are bony. But that hasn't stopped Kentucky from trying to teach people how to prepare the carp.
And then what you do is you start turning your knife and filleting away from those bones.
At this fishing tournament at Kentucky Lake in Gilbertsville, a man shows the crowd how to carve up and debone the fish. The state has also hosted tastings to show people that when you fry Asian carp in cornmeal, it's not that different from catfish. Kentucky officials are aggressively targeting the Asian carp. They're concerned about its voracious appetite, gobbling up food faster than native fish. They're worried about the region's $1.2 billion tourism industry. The fish have even changed the business model for one longtime fisherman and distributor. Just listen to Ronnie Hopkins' voicemail.
If you called about someone to get your Asian carp, you got the right person. So leave a short message and we will call you back.
Hopkins says it's possible to make a living on Asian carp, but it's not easy. He says native fish sell for about 60 cents a pound. The abundant carp go for just 10 cents a pound, and that's if he can find a local buyer.
I wish the state would get more involved in maybe using its product in our schools. We're buying from other countries and other states right now when we've got abundance of fish that we could use.
Almost all federal funding for Asian carp management goes to the Great Lakes. But officials in Kentucky are still looking to rid their waterways of the fish, including adding another processing plant. For NPR News, I'm Whitney Jones.
Invasive weeds are a big headache for cattle ranchers. Left to grow, they become food for the herd, and it's not exactly what ranchers want their cattle to eat. So the ranchers spent thousands of dollars to get rid of those weeds. Research now suggests that climate change may make the problem even worse. In a warmer climate, the weeds will thrive. Luke Runyon reports for member station KUNC in Colorado.
Ellen Nelson has a weed problem.
So how about if we go this way?
In the summer, one hillside of her small ranch near Bellevue in north central Colorado turns bright yellow. The culprit? A tall, rubbery weed with golden flowers called Dalmatian toadflax.
See, there's these little rosettes.
The plant is a pain. It crowds out native grasses that her cattle actually like to eat.
And it's such a tough, waxy plant. that by the time it really gets going, you just can't get the herbicide in it.
The expensive herbicide is a relatively new weapon for Nelson. It's already cost her thousands of dollars. She's tried pulling the plant by hand and releasing weevils that burrow into its stalks. Lately, Nelson's put her faith in her livestock, her steers, trying to convince them toad flax doesn't taste so bad.
You kind of have to teach them about a new plant. I've gotten some of them to eat some, but in general, that's a hard one.
Nelson admits, so far, the toad flax is winning. And as climate change takes hold, it's likely to only get worse, not just for Nelson, but for ranchers across the country.
Right. There's Dalmatian toad flax.
U.S. Department of Agriculture researcher Dana Blumenthal studies how climate change will affect large swaths of grassland. For about 8 years, Blumenthal and his team simulated a possible future climate, warmer and more concentrated with carbon dioxide, in the Wyoming grassland. Under those conditions, Dalmatian toad flax flourished.
The simplest reason that invasive species are likely to do well under future conditions is that they are pretty much by definition good at dealing with change.
Invasive plants are invasive because they can adapt quickly and more rapidly than the tastes of the grazing cattle that end up on your plate. To help ranchers adapt, Blumenthal says scientists need more data to make solid predictions.
There are going to be cases of invasive species, some of which we care a lot about, becoming much more problematic. And there are going to be cases of invasive species retreating from areas where they now exist.
What will America's grasslands look like a century from now? The answer to that question affects ranchers across the country who will face expensive headaches when weeds outcompete native grasses. Blumenthal says Dalmatian toad flax is just one piece of a much larger ecological puzzle.
We don't know enough to say how common this is going to be yet.
We are just treading water at the moment.
Steve Ryder is with the state of Colorado's Noxious Weed Management Program. He says, like managers in most states, his focus is on keeping new weeds out. Some have already gained a foothold.
If climate change is going to accelerate that, then we need to decide whether we're going to accelerate the response.
Come on, go.
Back at Ellen Nelson's ranch outside Bellevue, she's formulating this year's plan of attack against Dalmatian toad flax. She's welcoming a new class of steers. The first lesson, learn to love the taste of toad flax.
Maybe we're going to have to learn how to live with some of these weeds. I don't know. That might be heretical to say.
But it's a heresy that many of her fellow ranchers will have to get used to keep producing beef for American tables. For NPR News, I'm Luke Runyon in Greeley, Colorado.
And that story comes to us from Harvest Public Media, a reporting collaboration that focuses on agriculture and food.
Has the price of your happy hour mojito shot up? Guacamole more expensive? Blame it on limes. They're in short supply, particularly those from Mexico. More than 90% of limes consumed in the U.S. come from there. And as NPR's Carrie Kahn reports, bad weather, disease, and organized crime are driving the price way up.
Hola, Linda. Algo de limoncitos.
Vendor Alberto Reyes Stanislao tries to entice passersby at an outdoor market in Mexico City to buy his limes. But at three times the price, sales are down 50%, and he's getting an earful from customers.
Oro verde. Él dice, ya voy a hacer un collar de limones.
One customer said it seemed like he was selling green gold and told him instead of eating the limes, she was going to wear them as a necklace. A combination of factors has affected production. Heavy rains late last year in the states of Michoacán, Guerrero, and Veracruz hurt the crop. And in Colima, a big lime-producing state, a bacteria is infecting trees. Supply is tight at home, so are exports, which is pushing prices across the border even higher.
This year, we're in uncharted waters with limes. I've never seen limes at these prices.
Raul Mian of New Jersey-based Vision Import Group says in recent years, a 40-pound box of the so-called Mexican Persian variety went for as little as $4. This week, he paid 25 times that much.
I'm surprised that demand is still there and people are still requesting limes, even at $100 a box.
With prices that high, Mian says organized crime thieves are stealing truckloads of limes. He says his producers in Veracruz have had to hire armed security guards for the trip north to the border. In Mexico, authorities say lime production should pick up in the coming months and prices will hopefully fall. That's good news to Ruben Jacobo, who's grilling up ribeye, carne asada, and chicken at his street taco stand. He says a taco without a squeeze of lime on it is not a taco, and the high prices are cutting into his already small profit margin.
Desgraciadamente, cuando está más caro es cuando más se antoja. De veras.
Andy says, unfortunately, it seems the more expensive something is, the more people want it. Last week, he caught a woman emptying his complimentary plate of lime wedges straight into her bag. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Mexico City.